Welcome to the podcast of the Urban Mystic, the show focused on helping people understand and develop a practice of the presence of God so that they can shift from a relationship characterized by faith and distance to a deep, nurturing, and fulfilling relationship characterized by mutual desire and closeness. This podcast is for anyone who wants an intimate relationship with God. This includes church-going Christians, church leaders and volunteers, and those who consider themselves to be spiritual but not religious. If you enjoy this episode, I invite you to like the episode and leave a comment, to subscribe on your favorite podcast provider, and to contribute to the work of the Urban Mystic by following the link to PayPal in the show notes or the QR code on our website. This week, we engage in a vulnerable retrospective. We recognize that we're mourning a relationship not only with our past self, but also with the church and the idea of God associated with therewith and who we were in relation to that institution. This two-part retrospective clears the deck for our upcoming exploration of intimacy, and with that, an exploration of intimacy with God. Welcome back again, Steve. It's nice to be connecting with you again. We did a really good pre-chat just considering different topics and looking at intimacy, but then recently we'd recorded this episode around a change in language, shifting from the language of church to the language of parachurch, from, you know, and with that, I feel that there's a number of bonuses and that we actually redress an historical imbalance that came about by calling this institution church. And that introduced some confusion, that we moved away from church as the people to church as this event, this organization, the service that we go to, this objective thing, this institution, and the people that it employs, and this activity that it does generally on a Sunday morning, you know, public worship center. And so in moving from that to the language of parachurch, some of the benefits that we noted is the ability to then say, well, if we talk about the Catholic parachurch or the Methodist parachurch or the Vineyard parachurch or the Hillsong parachurch, it takes away some of the almost sanctified language around it, that the church is God's thing and we can't speak about the church in a negative way. We've got to protect it at all costs. We've got to give ourselves to it at all costs. And it is right by default, because that's what Christ gave his life for. That's who Christ bequeathed his authority to, you know, borrowing from the Catholic language. That's, you know, Christ gave his mission over to the church, and that becomes the institution rather than the people or even the dynamic community that forms and scatters. And so if we use the word parachurch for that, it loses that sanctified protection that it has and changes the relationship, that the institution is then there to support and enable the people to be the church, rather than the people are there to pay for and keep this thing called the church running, because that's really what God's about, is the church, not the people. You know, so in many ways, there's a lot of good that comes from it. But something that we've not spoken about, and you highlighted this a few weeks ago, this is my way of crediting it to you and also pitching to you, is you really noted that actually there's a tremendous loss, a mourning, a grieving that takes place in relation to changing that relationship with church, whether it's giving it up, whether it is trying to renegotiate the relationship, trying to set up boundaries that lead to some kind of loss or disconnection. There's various ways in which it is a relationship that we have. We have a relationship with this thing called church. And to change that or to give that up is in some ways to change not only our relationship with ourselves, but also to change our relationship with God. Together with that, there's a change of relationship with an institution and what it represented, as well as there's a change of relationship with communities and networks and groups that we've been a part of and services and activities that have become meaningful for us. And perhaps literally what happens as we change that relationship as well is that there's a loss of a constellation and a collection of relationships, from the institution through to activities like worship, through to activities that you and I have been a part of, whether it's sitting in teaching environments or being the person that preaches and teaches, through to being group facilitators, through to the networks of relationships that you have, et cetera, et cetera. there's multiple fronts of loss and transformation here. And I see it when people post-church, people have left church and they want to pick up that relationship or that journey with God again. I see so many people very quickly then defaulting back to church and wanting to go back to church and then going through the same cycle of disappointment and frustration and loss again, but not knowing how to move on to build a new relationship or build a new practice. Because in many ways, those past relationships and experiences really shape and let people know where they can get what they need from. So they know how to go to church and get something out of it. It doesn't work for them. They want to find a relationship with God again or practice that. What they're familiar with is going to church. What that does is take them straight back into the frustrations that they had. And at the same time, it's like then showing up to a relationship that didn't work. And so I've had this experience recently where I've visited a few church plants and I've also visited churches or a movement that I've been a part of. The thing that has struck me most about walking into those environments is that it's like running into an ex I'm still in love with, but the relationship hasn't worked out. It can't work out. And here I am being polite in an environment, behaving correctly socially, participating in something, but fundamentally, I don't want to be there. And fundamentally, it's grating me because this relationship doesn't work. It's actually hurt me tremendously on some levels. And on other levels, it was fantastic. It worked for me. I was a part of that system. There's things that I missed from it. So it's like I missed this thing, but it's a lover that didn't work out. And so I still want the benefits of it, but I know that I can't have it in that relationship. And that still leaves me then with the open-ended thing of, well, what do I do? What do I look for?
Maybe I'll just start by telling the story. It really struck me one morning. I was in the kitchen prepping things for kids for school. And my wife and I have been touching base every now and then around like church. And do we go back to church? And are we going to go to church? And what do we get out of it? And actually, we really don't want to. And so for me and for my story, that's where I was at. Just rooting through the kitchen, doing bits and pieces. And I just suddenly noticed a really, really deep sadness in myself. Okay, that's like curious what's going on there. When I paid some attention to it, it was this overwhelming feeling of loss of, sure, I may never go back to one of these places. I have known myself, my entire life has been at church, give or take. So that's a statement from the beginning. Both my grandfathers were priests in the Anglican Church. My uncle, my father's brother, was a priest in the Anglican Church. My father himself almost went into the priesthood in the Anglican Church. Both sides of my family are just heavily invested in church, and I just grew up going to church. It's just the rhythm of every Sunday. It was unheard of that you wouldn't go to church. You always went. When I was 19, I had a patch in which I stopped for a short while, just sort of finding myself a little bit and whatever. And I had a bit of a life-changing moment. And I went back to church after that as one of my ways of, and I put that clearly, one of my ways of coping, but also very, very sort of clearly and quite dramatically, very clearly connected with a dramatic encounter with God that sort of a save my life sort of moment. And so the outflowing of that was to really just move straight back into, well, that's the rhythm, you know, in a way that what you described there. Okay, well, I have this thing and God, and okay, well, you go to church because that's where you go for things like that. And immersed myself in my 20s in church and worked in churches. And so much of my identity was around this place. So much of my own self-discovery was in and around this institution. And I was given some really, how do I want to describe that? At the time, some really amazing gifts around there, and exposed to the Bible and music and prayer and sort of relationships there and service and all sorts of things that were very meaningful for me at that point and continued for a long, long, long time. Really just a piece of me. And all of that sort of stacks up into this moment of just deep sadness. And this, what I was contemplating was, what if I never go back there? That is a dramatic shift for me, for so much of my life, involvement in church, etc. So I started to just think through more and said, what does this mean? This feeling that I'm drawn back. I'm drawn back, that I'm not ready to let go of this church thing. And yet, I notice every time I go, more and more, 100, 110, 150, 300,000% ready to let go of this thing. Every time I go back, it's that same sort of feeling in a way you describe. Go back, it's deeply frustrating. And I feel emptier in a way coming away from going to a church than I did going in. And there's so many other things that make me feel far fuller, far more alive, far more connected, far more all sorts of things. And yet to let go of that, to really let go, feels close to impossible. And then just thinking through, yeah, well, that really is like a grieving process is the first thing that came up then. I notice the sadness. I notice I don't want to let go. And then I notice other things like anger, deep anger, when I go and visit a church. And it's usually projected outwards. And it's usually really unfair. And it is aimed at other people. And I have all these incredibly judgmental thoughts. And so if I sit in a service for an hour and a half, I spend the entire time critiquing everything and how much better I would be at all of the things going on there. And they get it wrong. And if only I could do it, then I would do it best. And there's people also useless. And on top of that, how stupid are they that they haven't yet woken up? The fact that God might not even be here. And I realize, oh my goodness, all that anger sent out is actually, yeah, that anger's in me. And I'm angry around this process. I don't want it to be like this, actually. And then I arrive at it would be so much more convenient to not see the things that I see or feel the things that I feel. Ah, what does that mean? It would be very convenient not to be grieving. Okay, yes, I noticed that as the second of four parts of grieving. It's this anger. It can't be like this. Can't be like this. And I just hide behind throwing it out onto just innocent people around me, basically, at the churches. And then I notice, yeah, there's this denial that it, maybe there's a church somewhere that gets it. Maybe if I just keep going, I'll. It can't be that it's like this. It can't be that I'm actually considering leaving the church because it's not what it says it is. Maybe all the things that Tim and I see, maybe we're just full of crap and there are churches out there and we just need to get over ourselves and, yeah, just denying this thing and it feels quite surreal. And then I also find myself bargaining with myself. What if I really got in again? What if I haven't given it my 100%? What if I do this? And then trying to bargain with God, hey, can you just change the situation? Because it would be far more comfortable for me to just return to this place, to this way of thinking, way of being, way of my orientation towards church and whatever. And just really noticing it's like losing someone. And then I realized that there's so many pieces to that, of this loss. There's, you know, I've been grieving my relationship with the Bible. That gave me so much to start with. And, you know, one of the reasons I started to let it go was I realized what it was giving me was actually some very unhelpful things. It was a great place to hide. It was a great place to feel very self-important, that I know a lot of things, that I can tell other people amazing things and make myself feel far more powerful and far more okay than I was actually feeling about myself. And it was hiding from me, hiding from God, using it as a tactic to tell God who God was through my study of this book. But it was also a very rich space to be. And I learned so much from that book, things that felt far more genuine than that. So there were these, you know, roughly these two sides. It's the relationship with the actual institution. So many things there. Like, yeah, I I've been a musician for so, so long, and that has been a big part of the church journey. And think, oh man, so I won't get to do music like that again. Okay, whoa, that's a big loss. There's part of the rhythms of a Sunday going to church for me is just going and sitting in a building that somehow says, okay, just calm down. It's date night. And actually, there's some time here really set aside that you can take some deep breaths and surface for a moment and say, hey, God, where are you? Or any other number of things. Something about a place and a time, right? You know, like that can be really super special. There's the idea of maybe, and I have met people, you know, you and I met through churchy type stuff, and I've met some other phenomenal people through churchy type stuff, because the space lends itself to, hey, maybe we're actually here to talk about some deep things, to lean into, you know, more than just the weather, politics, whatever, you know, sort of surface level nonsense that we often busy ourselves with. It's a place sometimes to ask deeper questions, to notice things, to aim for more intimacy. And 99% of the time, it's not that. But it has also been a place for that. So there's that of, oh, wow. So where do you put yourself to have those kind of conversations? You know, it's not a given that you go to a squash club on a Sunday morning and you say to someone, what's your deepest wound? What? Get out. So there's that. There's the social networking. And I mean, that's kind of what I've been looking for, is just a space to just really find possibly some like-minded adults and connect and have that social connection, friendship experience thing. You know, that's a big, okay, yeah, and that's possible in other places, but this has been a go-to for that. It's been an easy space to go to form that human-to-human connection. Is the idea of being part of a community that has a vision, that's maybe trying to achieve something, that real sense of belonging of, oh, wow, yeah, me too. I'm also part of this. And we share some sort of serve others. There's some possible value shared and shared vision.
There's a lot there by way of, I think, different kinds of activities and projects. There's a lot by way of like these constellations of micro communities and the large community and a place in it. And there's a lot of value that we get as people from feeling that we're making a valuable contribution. And I think that there's something about getting together to do things with people that enables that. And then there's the shared desire to pursue God and get to know God, that I think that's where, unfortunately, there's the inhibition that comes in, that's gatekept in particular ways that make it about God, but not with God kind of thing. We've explored that dynamic quite a bit. Like I'm recognizing similar kind of grieving processes with people who work in churches and for churches and are going to stay in them, but they want to see it change towards adopting intimacy with God, making a value for intimacy with God central, and renegotiating what they do around intimacy and the desire to pursue and engage God in ways that opens opportunities there. But even there, and in doing that, there's this grieving process of having been in a career for 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years, been doing it in a particular way, and being so used to that, and everyone expects you to do that. The language, the culture, the context says this is the way you do it. And so there's a sense of betraying it from within, and then being almost like, you know, am I authentic? Am I real? What do I say to people? Like my beliefs, my experiences, my desires shifted, and I'm responsible for community. What do I do? So that's a layer to it. I see the grieving for many people taking place in relation to that. And the thing of, hey, I felt that I was called to this, that I was schooled into this, and I've been doing it for 5, 10, 15, 20 years in a particular way. And now that I'm discovering the presence of God, I've got to mourn my past career. But I'm in the position of having to figure it out again. And so I think there's the grieving is as central for people that stay as for those that can't stay here any longer. The difficulty of trying to figure out what are my practices, what is my pursuit now, the difficulty of trying to adopt those practices and develop that culture of intimacy with God and practicing the presence of God is in many ways hamstrung by the degree to which we've been invested in what we're letting go of. And I think that that creates an even further gap, because we've got what we're discovering as valuable versus what's always fed us and nurtured us, where we found our home. And I think that there's this constant message, you know, it's like constantly being love bombed, gaslit, manipulated. There's any number of like in vogue terms that we can use. But when you hear people in this institution speaking, they're like, hey, you really want to know God, you've got to be doing this church thing. And, you know, Steve, the only reason why you're not part of this is because you're wounded, you know. So if you dealt with those wounds, you'd be here. And you know how you deal with those wounds? Come back here. And you know what? If you really wanted to do this thing, you'd be doing it here. That language, I feel, is quite powerful in almost perpetuating, stimulating, keeping that grief and that grieving process going. Because it's like having something that's dying that just isn't getting around to it.
Yeah, that's the exact picture that comes to mind, is like something on life support. Yeah. Because it strikes me that possibly the commonality across all of these is that actually it is a grieving of self as well as other things, because I am no longer the person I was when I was connected with what, you know, what I felt, the value of institution, those other relationships. Something has shifted in me, and I'm no longer willing to maintain the value of that. And I liked how you talked about kind of return to an old relationship. I think there's some sort of awareness, some sort of awakening of, oh, like that relationship is actually not good for me. So the previous version of me was connected with that and think, oh, this is really good for me. This is fine. This is good. And then there's a shift forward and actually, no, now I'm not connected with that anymore. I've moved on. There's a newness here. And the grieving is the letting go of the older sort of version of myself in a way. But those messages you talk about there are it's sort of multi-layered. There's a feeling for me of almost sort of, yeah, I wonder if I'm misreading this. So I should keep that version on life support in case I'm wrong. And I need to go back to that version. But actually, I'm really connected with, no, that it's okay. That person can die. But then that person was recognized, right, by the institution, by the leaders, by these people with this message. Yeah, but if you just came back. And if I let that person die, then the new version of me is very clearly not seen, not recognized. That's very threatening. For me, if I think about that, to not be seen, to not be recognized, which community will I go to now, which will see this new version of me and go, hey, there you are. Go and practice the presence of God with us. And I think that's part of what I'm desperately hoping for. I think when I look around, that's part of the bargaining, perhaps, part of the denial. Maybe I should retrace my steps to that person. That person was seen. That person was made to feel welcome. That I belonged. I mean, yeah, I can remember some even more previous versions of that self and sort of aligning with some very, very hateful theology.
Oh gosh. Don't you take me back to my fundamentalist enough charismaniac days.
Yeah, right. But there's a huge amount of currency in that, because then you're in the club and you're seen and you belong. And to step out of that, whoa, was really hard, because the immediate response I received was, oh my, we've really fallen. The value drops. And so in a way, you have to lean into that grief, I guess, and let go and really see the value of this new person is a healthier expression. It takes with it, you know, the good of the older manifestation, and perhaps leaves behind some of the unhealthier things. But there's an immediate sort of, there's an immediate risk and there's an immediate cost in that, because this new version of me is not accepted there anymore. I'm going to have to go and find a new community, a new belonging.
The new person that is emerging also gets to face the backlash, the ad hominem, the personal attacks, that you're no longer with us and now you're against us. And because you're against us, it's open season. We can now attack you, your personality, that thing you said years ago that we can dig up and hold against you, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I still come across people that are very, very anti me because I've put out some idea or other and they got wind of this and then they ran off with it. And, you know, so you're a heretic because you did this, or, you know, you've embraced feminine language for God. And you know who does that? Oh, there's these Wiccans and these other people, and there's this one other heretical group. So you've become one of them, you know, as a person. No, I've got my own individual ideas, and walking this out in relationship with the divine other that speaks to me and engages me. You know, there's no room for that. Well, you know, that then quickly becomes, but that can't be God, because, you know, you can only experience God in these pre-sanctified ways, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot by way of dynamics that it's no simple process to leave a church or a community of faith because of how complex the relationships and dynamics turn.
Or as you say, to stay and leave a previous version of yourself, even staying. Yeah. Yeah. Carry on.
Yeah. And so I think that what you highlight there, that fundamentally there's an emerging and changing relationship with self that then impacts relationship with others, because that community generally doesn't change, but one can, in a relatively short space of time, go from loving the preaching or the worship or the dynamics that are going on there to be in a position where none of that feeds you or stimulates you or meets your needs anymore. They haven't changed. Their quality may even have improved on all those fronts.
I was just going to say, yeah, right?
Yeah, exactly. They could be like doing
inverse response. Yeah.
They could be doing better, but something has fundamentally changed where that relationship with the institution first, the relationship with faith first, is no longer what satisfies. We're once going to shift from the faith as relationship paradigm, where God is distant, and you know what says that I'm faithful to God? I'm serving. I'm putting the money in here. I'm putting the time in here. I'm being faithful in all these ways. I just want to make an impact in the world. I just want to be faithful. You know, when one transitions from that to actually, I want to be in the presence of God. I want to experience God. I want to hear God's voice immediately for me. Like the Bible, what's valuable? Its value isn't taken away. It just no longer feeds me or meets my needs, in the same way that hearing God's voice does and encountering God directly and immediately does. And so when that shift takes place, there's a lot of kickback from the system that makes that mourning even harder. The church in that sense becomes like the zombie that won't let you go and is forever after you relentlessly. Whether you're asleep or awake, it's constantly advancing, saying, we're going to make you one of us. Well, there's a scary image. Could be because I've recently watched an episode of The Walking Dead, but...
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, so fascinating. So I think also I would sort of really, I'd want to go, I feel like I also want to quickly sort of move to, I'd want to point out that for me, it's not, and I don't hear you saying this either, but just I think for clarity's sake, unless you are, stop me if I'm getting it wrong, but it's not like a black and white, like, you know, now gathering with any amount of people or reading the Bible or going to a church or, you know, the building or whatever is now immediately bad, and the new expression only is good. It's that I don't know how to describe it, like a new level of awareness, which is to gather and to notice there isn't presence of God is different than to just gather and carry on doing the, you know, like the spirituality thing is for me as well, is also a grieving thing. To gather with people to pray is now very different for me if I stand there wondering, sure, everyone has a lot to say, so much so that I wonder, God, are you even still here? Did you get crowded out of the building with all the ferocious praying going on? And so it is no longer just exclusively the get together in a group and pray that feeds me. And I would gladly get together in a group and pray where the presence of God is also very important, if not priority. But because it's knowing that the point of gathering together to pray is to meet with God, you know, whereas previously just gathering together to pray was enough. Very sort of echo chamber, one way sort of. And so there's so many things there that I think don't lose meaning completely, but it changes. And it's missing this vital component. And that's what I find. That's what I find the anger coming in. So I sit there going, why the hell did I come back here? Like, what am I doing? This is obviously not what I'm looking to do, which is to potentially do a lot of these things still, but from the framework or the orientation rather of the meeting with God, the presence of God. And so it does sound almost like without that, then this is all stupid and pointless. Yes. But the things themselves are not so much stupid as pointless. It's just kind of, I guess, the anemic way in which they happen, if I can put it that way, is, yeah, I just want to be a part of that anymore.
Yeah, because I think you really put your finger on the pulse or the lack of pulse there, in the sense that it's not gathering. It's not being purposeful together that's the issue. It's not gathering for worship that's the issue, or even teaching. I suppose it's embracing the language of what is the main event, what is the purpose for which we gathered it, and how is that fulfilled? And in the vast majority of cases, the idea is that to have gathered is to have met with God. And when that bubble pops, it changes the relationship to that, because then simply together, you can gather. Like, I can go and enjoy meeting people, or I can go and I can find something that's valuable there. But is that event how I want to be spending my time? You know, what do I want to be doing?
Especially under the banner of this is meeting with God.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
It's a clearer transaction in a way to say, well, I'm just going to go and hang out with a bunch of people. But to go under the guise of, we hang out together, we meet with God, and we don't do any of that. Yeah, I like how you said the bubble has popped, and I can't reconstitute that in any way. And I don't want to, actually. I'm actively not wanting to. And yet, the whole point I'm talking about, the grieving, is apparently I do. Actually, that's the grieving process I notice, is actually, if I could, yeah, the anger and sadness that comes out, but then very much the denial and the bargaining is it would be easier to go back, actually, in the same way. Yeah, to lose someone, to move forward through that is very hard. I think the default reaction is to hold on, to no, I don't want to lose that person. I didn't ask to lose that person. It's not fair. It's not nice. And I feel that very similarly with this whole process. And it really surprised me, to be honest. I think that's something that I find fascinating.
So the two times that I'm thinking of where I've recently gone to church, I think I was equally surprised to discover the feelings that I had within me. And I was particularly aware going to the Vineyard Church, which has got so many elements that I like, and is actually the place that I struggled most to differentiate between, I suppose, the value and desire that I have for intimacy with God in an environment where that actually provided so much foundations and so much of the model or the practice of the presence of God for me. That was the environment that I found the hardest. And it was the hardest because it is so close. It is so close to a lot of what I like and want. And the practices are so close there. And yet that also creates some of the biggest push. going to another church environment that just has a complete other paradigm. That's all, you know, I don't know. It was like a cult that had a record on play, basically, about how biblical they were and how Bible-based they were and how biblical they are and how Bible-based they are. And, you know, from one person to the other, to the next person, to whatever, to eventually just having conversations with people that they were like, yeah, you know, I joined this church, you know, we're so Bible-based and we do this and we're about getting people into the Bible. And, you know, I run this ministry venture that's all about getting people focused on the Bible. And then hearing about that for a while, and then eventually there's the gap where someone says, so like, what are you into? And I'm like, yeah, I hear you on that, but I'm all about the presence of God and the direct immediate encounter with God. And they're like, yeah, but is that biblical? And I'm like, I actually just want to take the Bible out their hand and slap them with it.
error. You're supposed to say the Bible.
So although ostensibly there's lots of frustration there, because I just hit this wall of this does not compute. Going into a vineyard environment, I feel like I don't hit a wall. I hit something that is so close that I end up being doubly frustrated, because there's so much language that's in common and people go, but we do that and we do have the same thing. And, you know, God does pitch up in ways here. And, you know, we have these things. And I'm like, yes, but you're not getting it. You're not getting it. And they're like, no, you're not getting it. And that's where it gets frustrating for me is in that, in the, where there's a clear paradigm difference, it's a lot easier for me to moderate my frustrations. Where the paradigms are close but there's a mist, it's really hard. And I feel like it's equally frustrating for people that I engage in that environment, because they get frustrated too. They're like, we just want you to come and be a part of this. And you're like, what you've got there, just bring that in for us. And I'm like, but it doesn't work, because foundationally, paradigmatically, things have to change here. And they're like, but we don't want to change. And I'm like, well, I don't want to change either. I'd have to change. I'd have to sacrifice something to be here. And I can't do that. And so I've got to take the loss and I've got to take the grief instead. And that's hard. That's hard. And I feel like I'm not surprised by it, but the mourning is a present and ongoing thing.
It's really kind of, yeah, it's really poignant how you describe that sort of, I'm thinking of the lens of relationship. One person says to another, but come on, just like, can't we just do this thing the way it was? So yeah, but I don't want to do this the way it was anymore. I want more different. Okay, well, just bring that more or different in here. Yeah, but it wasn't working here because of the way in which this relationship was structured. The dynamic we had, whatever you might want to talk about, that actually doesn't work here. No, but of course it does. Of course we have love and connection and listening and sharing and depth and intimacy and all. Yeah, no, I don't feel that anymore. Of course we do. Just come and just, let's just keep doing that. No, I don't want that anymore. That has to change. No, I don't want to change. Oh. Okay. Yeah. And I don't want to give up the change that I've seen. It's really poignant when you say that in that way. If I think about a relationship between two people, why can't we just keep going? Yeah. Well, because I've changed. Okay. But I don't want to change with you. Yeah. I know. So then I guess this is over. No, it doesn't have to be over. Just stay. No, that means giving up this new version of myself that I've discovered, and I don't want to do that. And I think the surprise for me is actually that I do still long for the old relationship. I really do. That sadness is a deep, deep longing of, I just actually want to go back to that. And then I get frustrated with myself. I notice that. So sometimes there are one or two people in my life who'll say, yeah, but you know, would you give church another try? I think, yeah, do you know how desperate I am actually to just give church another try? Actually, really, 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 really. I think that surprised me. I'm really desperate that it could just go back to what it was. I noticed that longing. I just kind of just go back to the way it was. Maybe before I saw what I saw or feel what I feel, or notice what I notice, and I'm no longer satisfied with the way it was. And that's it. It's not that some of the building blocks of that so sort of inherently wrong, so much as it's not enough for me anymore. I want something. It does feel like more, and it feels perhaps even unfair to say it that way for some reason, which I would have to spend some time with. But I do. I want more. I'm not okay with just the way it was. And yet I also deeply long for the way it was. I think there was just a safety and a comfort and also a formative version of me. And I notice as well that the grieving is really a loss of a part of myself. It's a leaving behind a previous version of myself with some previous values, some previous meaning connections to the expression of myself. And then there's a new expression of that, and that's uncomfortable. It's quite raw. And I don't yet know if I fully want to accept that or not. This is where I notice some of the grieving process. So
there's so much in recognizing the loss and the grief. One of the ways that I've landed on being able to manage this, I feel, is through that language change for me. That this thing that has been called church for so long is parachurch. And that frees me up in many ways to say it's valuable in what it offers and does. I'm not wanting what it does. I'm wanting something else. That doesn't mean that I don't want community, relationship. That doesn't mean that I don't want ways of practicing spirituality and even things like worship, sharing worship together with people. What it does mean is that I want to practice that to a different end goal. And the goal for me is not having a growing membership in an organization, a growing contributing membership, people are contributing time and money to make that institution run so that I can preach them. I'd rather be doing a different journey where I have authentic relationships with people as opposed to institutional relationships that don't hit that depth of authenticity. I'd rather have those fewer, more authentic relationships and have the kind of journeys that I have with people where they're trying to figure this thing out for themselves, this thing of how difficult intimacy actually is, how challenging intimacy with self is with their significant other, and where they're raising questions of saying, well, what is intimacy with God? And trying to figure that kind of thing out. That journey I find tremendously valuable. Whereas I find that being back or going back to the church environment, it's like, but you have that relationship. There's nothing more for you. If you're wanting something more, it's because something is broken or lost in you. If you were fixed and you were normal, you'd be just like us, content with sitting in a pew listening to a sermon, having the coffee, meeting people, and going home. And that's where I find it really helpful, the ways in which we've touched on those dynamics of relationships and saying to people, if you were neglected as a child and you want intimacy in adults, you can, it's not to say you can't have that because you didn't have that as a child. And yet it's like we're saying that to people when they're saying, I want intimacy with God, and they've been neglected or abused. So being free to discover that kind of language and to discover that kind of imagery and to enter into that process, I think I'm finding enabled by the new language, by the new practices, by the new ways of journeying with people and focusing on intimacy and engagement rather than faith. I think that's tremendously valuable. And yet with that, I'm still carrying the grief and the loss. I guess that's part of the grieving process. It's like there's no right way to grieve. There's no strict timeline for it. And carrying that grief and the loss is not the same as saying, hey, I'm wounded by church and I've gotten upset with it. No, I'm actually just grieving a loss of a relationship.
I'm really fascinated to watch myself over the next 6 months, let's say, and notice sort of what becomes of this if I give it attention. Am I able to participate a little more consciously with this grieving process, to notice what I'm letting go of, to notice what's changed, what I don't want to and won't come back, what that means in terms of I want to steer clear, careful in the language in terms of not like forcing it, because I don't think you can force the grieving process. I think my understanding of it is exactly so that it has its own timeline, its own process. And if I just use that simple 5-point model that I'm obviously alluding to all the time during our conversation, you bounce around. It's not simply just hope, denial, anger, sadness, bargaining, acceptance. You bounce around sometimes between those four and skip one and come back to a deeper level and whatever. But the energy through grieving is towards and through whatever the timeline and the experience of that and whatever. And I'm curious over what that will look like over the next 6 months. As it, in a way, this is almost like a framework now for interacting with that within myself. And I think that's part of my self-to-self relationship, as I notice the grieving, and perhaps even will help me in self to others. And as I think about it now, I wonder what that'll be like to process my grief with God and actually lean into that around, sure, this is for lack of a better phrase, the next iteration of me interacting with God on some previous versions of me.
Mm. There's multiple layers of grief there, as I hear it, in relation to self, church, and even to God, because there's an idea of God and an image of God that's strongly associated with the kinds of churches that people are in, just royally, people, but that you've been in.
And that I can really pay attention on this sort of, again, clumsy language in a way, but this version of me now is here, is present now. It's able to be present with God and to pay attention, perhaps with God, at what is this grieving thing like as I grieve within me, with me, with others, and perhaps, even with you. And what does that mean? And that I think is one of the energies of grief, is that to move towards acceptance is to actually look into a very sort of, it looks into an uncertain future. That's where we want to go back. Is that safer, more clear? But actually, there is a new that's happening, and that's not always very clear, or not immediately clear, and definitely not long-term access. How can I put this? We don't have access to the long-term picture. That's the whole point of it, is there's a becoming here, and that part of the grieving process is the becoming. And to just go, okay, yeah, that's part of this process. And even as I remember, if I think back to where I started tonight about just remembering that moment in the kitchen, there was a deep, deep sadness. And in some ways, what I remember also is that was actually quite welcome to notice that. Like, oh yeah, that's actually really what that is. And, I know the power of naming things as they come through and just noticing, oh, I can really name that. That is a deep, deep sadness of letting go and of missing. And being not okay with that, but just, it kind of, it gave me a little bucket to put some of that experience in. Okay.
It's great to hear an ownership of grief that isn't predominantly covered over by the guilt and the pressure to return. And an expression of grief that acknowledges the value that was, that you would return to if you could. I think that's some of what I'm hearing as you speak and share. I could be wrong, so correct me if I am. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
I would say would rather than could, but yeah. Because I'm very much in touch with that agency, right? If it's not, I'm not kept from that, but I actually keep myself from that because I don't actually want to go back to that expression. But carry on, yeah.
Thank you for that nuance, yeah. Yeah, so I think with you, I'm also excited to see what a conscious journey with grief in relation to that loss of church. Like what can that yield? Because it's a grieving, I feel, that can potentially free up the desire of what you're looking for. Because it's then unencumbered by having to return to church to find that. I don't know if that makes sense or if that's too abstract.
Yeah.
But it's just that for so many people I see that when they get in touch with that desire again for God, their return to the Bible studies, the going to church, the, you know, the home groups, being involved in ministry, you know, giving of your tithe, et cetera, et cetera. They return to those because that's how they know how to respond to God. That's what they know to do. And what I'm hearing from you is I can embrace the grief. I don't have to do. The grief can inform me in a way as well.
Yeah. That's really beautiful. I feel that the grief is not actually a threat to who I am, but is embracing a new becoming of who I am. And that actually to lean into that, actually, yeah, it forms me moving forward. It makes me, shapes me in some way. And that is, yeah, grieving is a central part of relationships. Even relationships that continue have grief as we let go of previous version of ourselves, previous pictures of the other, and lean into the new person who emerges and grows and matures and develops and steps forward over time. And that I feel happening in me as I notice that. And I recognize that very much in you do, I think, a lot more of that than I do, but in my contact with some people who've spoken somewhat similarly, it feels similar. This, what you talk about, yeah, okay, oh, you just got to go back to the Bible studies, the this, the that, or whatever. But the actual shape of the person almost doesn't fit through those doorways anymore. When you do, you realize, this is not it. I hope also something I've been thinking a lot about the anger associated. I hope also that if I lean through this sort of grieving process, I am going to become much kinder in my orientation towards other people, because I notice just huge amounts of judgment and, yeah, it's really like scorn, like looking down on these stupid sheep who just attend the service and that and that and that and that. And the more I spend time with it, the more I realize that that's nothing to do with anyone else. It's actually really to do with me. And the anger is connected very much with like sort of the pain of moving through this loss, and that I want to blame all these people around me for that, but that's not actually it. And the pain is a hard but a necessary part of the shaping of the new becoming in a way. And that yeah, the sort of forming thought as I say that. But it's a projection. I know I'm more and more in touch with that. But that I can actually be, yeah, just not such an asshole around spaces like that and so judgmental. Which is not to say, you know, one can't be critical and critique or whatever, but there's definitely a judgmental side that I'm hopeful that there's a lot more empathy and connection and yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there is that sense in which the things that we've battled with and are frustrated with in ourselves are the very things we're going to be frustrated with others about. Like if we're not good at, you know, I'll just pick something neutral, like making decisions under pressure, we can become highly critical of people who either do make decisions very quickly under pressure or don't, based on whichever expression that we have. But that could be something within ourselves that we're actually projecting. And I think you're highlighting something. Yeah, like I know for myself, I'm particularly impatient and judgmental of those fundamentalist Bible basher types. And that's because I'm uncomfortable with the fact that I was schooled into becoming one, and I became one for a short bit. And even though I didn't like it and didn't sit right for me, I feel like I've become complicit in an abuse at one stage in my life that I don't want to see taking place in the world. And I'm particularly impatient with people that are very much focused on, you know, like Bible church because of that. And that's largely because, you know, I studied in an evangelical environment and I was surrounded and mentored by these charismaniacs, and they were all about that. And so I was uncomfortable. Church didn't fit for me. But I was trying to figure out my identity, my being, my calling, and really just pushed in that direction. That's, but you're called. That's what it is. You know, it's like you've got to become that. And so I tried to, and I couldn't do it. But I hate myself, and I really hate, you know, in a sense, very frustrated with others who can become that. And I agree with you. I think you've landed on an insight there that I'm really gonna take home with me. You know, that through embracing that grief, I can become kinder to those people. I can become kinder to others, to people that have, whether they've fallen into that trap or whatever it is, there's reasons why they get there. And if I can see deeper than just that surface behavior, perhaps I can be part of the solution for them than becoming an opposite version of them or just becoming overly critical of them.
Yeah, I need to think on that quite a bit more because it's still quite raw. And a lot of what you say that really resonates with me. And I think, sure, yeah, I want to. It's also part of my sort of the curiosity that I see surfacing. Okay, yeah, that's, what will that be then? If I'm liking the sense of momentum of the grieving process as opposed to feeling stuck with, yeah, this is what it is. I go to those places, I'm angry, I come home. The grieving process feels like I can come unstuck from that and start to move forward. And then I think that's some of what I notice. Oh, that maybe unlocks. Maybe I just don't go to those places anymore. Maybe if I happen to be in a place like that, I don't have to be angry like that. Or I can notice what is it that the anger is trying to show me. And that's also, I wonder, sort of the resonance with what you're saying there of perhaps, yeah, it's very powerful what you say. I hate myself. Oh, yeah, I feel that. I think, sure, oh, this, yeah, also there for me, some disgust, some shame, perhaps some, you know, it's just, okay, yeah. And what will that unlock? Where will I become unstuck as I move through that process, as I notice those? What will that bring rather than the stuckness of just the anger or just the whatever? And none of that is, I would be quick to say as well, none of that is bad. I'm not saying anger is bad. Well, but it's just to notice these things and to allow them to be what they are rather than to just be stuck. I often say to people I work with, none of the emotions are bad. It's rigidity in emotion that is bad. To move between emotions is natural human experience, to move between anger, sadness, fear, and joy, essentially. Good. It's the fluidity that is good, the rigidity to be stuck in one. And to not notice what is it that's happening and what has it come to teach me is unhelpful. I'm thinking, okay, yeah, I like that sense of momentum that now comes through. Okay, grieving process, move with that to notice, to be curious. What is the anger? What is the sadness? What is the denial? What is the bargaining? You know, very sort of summarized. And what becomes out of that?
Grief is easy to think of as a loss rather than a transformative process. And I feel like what you've highlighted is grief as a transformative process. Like grief embraced to run its course in a healthy way, as opposed to deflected or denied.
Surprisingly enough for me, because, sorry, if you ever listen to this, Uncle Rob Bell, forgive me, I'm not taking a pot shot at you, but there was a time in my life at which I really immersed myself in his thinking and writing and whatever, and was really sort of incredibly helpful, and then reached a point at which I sort of let go of that. And so I'm a bit surprised where I say that is I'm brought back to a book that Rob Bell wrote on grieving, essentially, in a way, and pain and grief. And he describes in this way, it's kind of like, this is going to be my language, but the idea is I first came across him putting it together, is really it's grief is an uninvited change that comes into your life and shakes the cage, rattles the cage, and ushers in a transformative process that you didn't plan, ask for, know you needed, etc. But it does come and change things. And sort of moving through the grief is allowing the dust to settle, but also participating and moving through the transformation into something new. But it always I know that's a big word always. It always starts out as an uninvited guest. But it can become a welcome guest, I suppose. I've never forgotten that nuance there. It was unbelievable. I think much of the rest of the book sort of was okay. But it'd be worth reading that just for that nuance. It was really, really deep. Oh, yeah, that is... It's an uninvited guest, but can become a welcome guest.